Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Christian Sager. Hey, how many times, like, when you're just walking around the city, we live in Atlanta, like, you're at a park or you're just walking around maybe with your son or something like that, do you see just these utterly bizarre mushrooms?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I this is something I love about living in Atlanta, or at least the slice of Atlanta I live in,
because
there's plenty of, plenty of vegetation around, plenty of, park areas. And then after a rain, typically, is when you see these strange fungal bodies burst up out of the ground and take on weird, bizarre shapes. In fact, it's something that I've loved doing with my son, who's four now, but for years now, when we're going to the park and all, if we see some sort of a weird mushroom, I go, oh, let's look at this weird mushroom. And so he'll point them out and I'll go, oh, there's a weird mushroom over here. Let's go look at it.
And you guys try to figure out what it is. Like, you take pictures and then back home, you try to like match it to a database or something like that.
Yeah. You know, you just do a search for, hey, what kind of mushroom looks like a weird phallus? And in fact, that mushroom, which frequently pops up in our own yard out of the mulch, is one that's called Mutinus caninus, or dog stinkhorn.
Okay, yeah.
Because it supposedly looks like a dog phallus, and it smells really awful.
Oh yeah. That's the worst image. I don't know what a dog stinkhorn looks like, but I'm immediately picturing the dog lipstick. Ugh.
Yeah.
That's the worst. Well, because, you know, I'm from the Northeast originally, and man, the mushrooms down here are bonkers. So some of our Facebook followers might remember this, but I posted to our Facebook page maybe 6 months ago, took my dog to the dog park, and it was right after a rain, like you described, maybe a day. And there was this totally bizarre thing growing up out of the ground. Didn't even look like a mushroom. It looked like the egg from Alien.
Huh.
And it looked like the egg had opened.
Uh-huh.
And it was red on the inside. And I took a picture of it and I was like, well, who better to answer what this thing is than our Facebook followers? Mm-hmm. So I uploaded the picture and said, does anybody know what this is? And they did. Somebody, figured it out. It's the devil's finger fungus. That's what it's called. And like not a month later, Nerdist did like a feature on their site on the devil's finger fungus and how it looks exactly like a xenomorph egg.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, this looks like some alien thing that's in the dog park. I don't want my dog around it. What is this thing? You know? So I was a little worried at first, but it turns out it's relatively harmless.
Yeah. There's another one that I can't remember what this one is called, but I see it in our yard sometimes where it's as if there is an underworld.
Okay.
And occasionally they use caulking to fill in holes between our world and theirs.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of puffs
this
out in like a polyurethane bubble.
Yeah, I know exactly which one you're talking about. I've seen that one before, like on the sidewalk near where I live. Yeah.
Now tell me this. You're a dog owner. I'm not.
Yeah.
In various neighborhood threads that I've seen about weird mushrooms,
yeah,
I've seen some people react with wonder and awe and occasionally, you know, nausea.
Yeah.
But other people, particularly a few dog owners, are like, oh, I hate those mushrooms. How can I get rid of them? Because
yeah,
there's this fear, and I don't know to what extent it's founded or unfounded, but they're afraid their dog is going to eat the mushrooms,
yep,
which, of course, can have disastrous consequences.
My wife worries about that constantly. Mm-hmm. Every day when she gets home, she does a walk through the yard and picks every single mushroom up that's growing in the yard so that our dogs won't eat them.
Okay.
We have a lot of mushrooms, actually, because we have a really big – well, you've been over to my place before. My front yard has a really big old tree.
Yeah.
Our landlord is actually an arborist, and so he told us, look, this tree is really old. In a couple of years, we're going to have to take it down because like the roots are rotting. And the way you can tell is because of the way that these bizarrely huge mushrooms are growing up all around the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they're feeding on the rot of the decay down there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, of course, fungi and mushrooms are excellent decomposers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, that's how they get by, right? So, you know, at first I was a little worried and I said, well, hey, you know, you're the arborist. Is this cool for my dogs to be around? He said it was fine. But my wife still worries. So yeah, she always cleans up that stuff. And are you talking about like nextdoor.com or like those, you know, those like message boards?
Oh, no, this is just like a Facebook group, you know?
Yeah. Cause there's a lot of that chatter on our neighbor. Well, you and I live in a fairly close proximity to one another. So maybe it's the same neighborhood board, but yeah, there's concern about those mushrooms. I haven't heard anything about like, watch out for this one, it's poisonous. But one of the things that's fascinating about Atlanta is that there's so many fungal spores flying around that you get these really bizarre kind of off the wall mushrooms that you wouldn't normally see, you know, especially in a city area.
Yeah.
So, who knows? I mean, I don't know about you, but for the mushrooms that we're going to talk about today, if you guys haven't guessed yet out there, listeners, we're going to talk about weird mushrooms today.
Yeah. And of course, we can't cover all of them by any stretch of the imagination.
So,
we each pick three, either specific mushrooms or sort of a general type of mushroom or a type of mushroom behavior.
Yeah.
And we're going to sort of have a potpourri,
sort of
episode.
Yeah. None of mine are poisonous. Did you choose any poisonous ones?
I almost
chose the death cap, which is the most poisonous one.
I
mean, there's varying levels of things you shouldn't do with the ones that I'm going to talk about today, but
the toxicity doesn't really factor heavily into the areas I discuss. One of them is definitely not poisonous because it's an edible mushroom.
Yeah.
The others, it encompasses a number of different types. But this is the kind of thing where if you guys like, us talking about, mushrooms, we can come back and do more.
Yeah.
We can do a one just focusing on poisons.
Do a series on various mushrooms. Oh, poisonous mushrooms would be good. Well, I have to say, this reminded me of an episode we almost did almost a year ago. To this week, which was, our episode about wolfsbane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it reminded me of aconite poisoning, reading through these descriptions of all of the mushrooms. And really, I had no idea how in depth a field mycology is and how precise it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the entries for these mushrooms were very, very detailed. I mean, so detailed that we could do an entire episode just on one species. So for these entries, we really had to, I think, boil them down to their essence. No, again, no pun intended. We're not actually boiling the mushrooms down here.
Yeah.
but yeah, they're fascinating. And it's just this thing that we all kind of just live with.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like they're everywhere
and we
buy them at the grocery store and we eat them.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's an endless variety of them and they all do these like very different things and have incredibly complex compounds inside of them. And I feel like we're only, like, as a scientific society, like, on the tip of understanding fungal growth.
Yeah, I mean, there is so much diversity out there. We keep discovering new species to the point where I can only give, like, a rough estimate right now. But essentially, we're looking at 100,000 different fungi species. Jeez. And of those, we're looking at in the neighborhood of 14,000 mushrooms. And again, that's a number that's constantly changing. I looked at numbers from a few years back and they were significantly less than that. So it's an amazing world. And you know, they're so weird. They're so alien. It's no wonder that you can find conspiracy theorists who think they came from space.
Yeah. Well, especially when you see ones that look like a xenomorph egg.
Yeah.
Going back to our Wolfsbane episode, right? Like, imagine all of the folklore that sprang up out of all the various species of mushroom. Because they're so different looking. If you didn't, you know, have a broader scientific understanding of them, you wouldn't even classify them as being the same thing.
Yeah, like one of my favorite monsters from the Dungeons and Dragons universe are the Myconids, which of course are mushroom people that
live
in the underground.
Did you do a monster science episode on them?
No, we did a monster science on the mushrooms of Matanga, which was a Toho horror film about these spores that turn people into walking mushrooms.
Yeah.
It's actually a really creepy movie, totally different vibe than most of the Toho films.
Well, so full disclosure, audience, the reason why I proposed that we do an episode on weird mushrooms is I'm working on like a horror story right now that the basis is about mushrooms and spores and mycology. And so I was like, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about this. And I think it would be a good topic for our listeners. So here we are. One of the things that I just want to bring up before we dive into the individual ones, the fungi as an organism essentially has a parasitic lifestyle. And that's something I think we forget about. We see our mushrooms in the grocery store wrapped in plastic and we just go, oh, a lot of people just think it's a vegetable, right? But they absorb soluble nutrients through cell membranes. That's how they subsist. And together with bacteria, as you said, they're responsible for the decay of organic matter. Now, some estimate that 25% of the biomass on the entire planet is fungi.
Huh.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's worth, go mycologists. It's worth studying further and us knowing a lot more about these, especially when you get into the health benefits that we'll talk about.
Yeah. So without further ado, let's go ahead and kick things off. I believe you have our first mushroom of the episode.
Yeah. And this is the one that is most well known for its health benefits. It's called the reishi mushroom.
Oh, and I want to jump in here real quick and just tell everybody that on the landing page for this episode, I'm going to have a picture of each one that we're discussing. So if you start wondering about it, just go to stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Yeah, and you'll be able to see what each one of these looks like, especially because we chose some really bizarre looking ones. The reishi isn't as well known for being bizarre looking, although it is kind of weird looking. It's mostly known for its life extending properties. In fact, they've been used medicinally for at least 2,000 years because they have a reputation for promoting health and longevity. Reishi, I believe, is the name for it in Japan. It's also called the Lingji mushroom in China. Now, you may recognize these. They're kind of a deep reddish brown. They're shaped sort of like saucers. The upper surface of them looks like it's lacquered when it gets wet. And because they have this glossy look, some people call them varnished conchs. And I went, what's a conch? Well, a conch is a mushroom that has pores instead of gills.
Yeah.
And again, I'd never heard of them referred to as gills before, so that's a nice creepy metaphor there as well.
I have to say this one kind of looks like they might be leathery human ears.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what's funny is I don't know if you've ever played this video game before, but there's a video game called Battleborn, and my wife is addicted to it, and I play it with her a lot. Anyways, so there's this guy who's a living mushroom person, and he... his head is like a mushroom cap, and his head looks like a reishi mushroom. And he's the healer in the game. So he's the one who, like, he blasts the other characters with mushroom spores and makes them feel better. And then he can take off his mushroom cap and throw it down on the ground, and it acts as like a healing area buffer or something like that. So I have to assume that the people who made Battleborn were inspired by the reishi mushroom when they came up with this character. Anyways, the reishi, they grow up to be 8 inches to or around 20 centimeters in diameter. You usually find them in temperate forests. These are moist areas, sometimes in Asia, Europe, South America, and the U.S., and they typically attach themselves to trees. So similar to what I was just talking about with the tree in my front yard, they're probably feeding off of the decay on these trees. So here's the deal. Why is it a weird mushroom? Well, there's actually something to this life-extending property thing. This isn't just like a folklore myth. They are prepared as teas or as infusions. You can also get them as capsules or tinctures, and you can even eat them in candy, chocolate bars, and coffee blends. I was thinking to myself that a reishi coffee blend might be good, but I don't know what a reishi mushroom tastes like yet.
Yeah, I guess it would taste like a mushroom tea, which is generally not that pleasant. in my opinion, yeah, I don't know.
Probably a little
personal
bitter.
Taste may vary.
Yeah. Now you see, so when I went to do research on this one, you see a lot of advertisements or articles pop up about them in kind of new agey style publications about these life extending properties, right?
Mm-hmm. Because we are talking about traditional medicine and supplements here, so.
Exactly. They used to be pretty rare, but there's new cultural cultivation advances that make them more widely available. But the reviews of science literature do indicate that most of the medicinal claims for these mushrooms can be validated. So let's just talk briefly about what's the science behind them. Well, research has found that because of unique compounds in these mushrooms, they can stimulate our brain neurons, search and destroy cancer cells, and prevent the development of fat cells in obese individuals. So that alone is like, that's a pretty broad summary, but wow. And they've done lots of studies on mice and humans, but studies on mice have shown that these mushrooms may also have therapeutic effects on asthma, allergies, autoimmune diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes, liver failure, and more. Now, it all boils down to these three compounds that are in the reishi mushroom that give it its health benefits. And this is what why I said earlier, like, these mushrooms are just incredibly complex in their organic matter. So the three are polysaccharides. Now, these have anti-aging effects because they prevent abnormal blood vessel formation in our bodies. They also boost immune system function. There's also triterpenes that protect the liver. They lower our blood pressure and our cholesterol, and they prevent platelet clumping in the blood that leads to heart attacks or strokes. They also fight allergic responses that are triggered by histamines and indicate anti-cancer activity. Now, the last compound is called the Ganoderma lucidum peptide. We got a lot of Latin in this episode because mycology really loves its Latin. Now, that's a protein that has strong antioxidant characteristics that are still being studied. So there's a lot going on here with this reishi mushroom. There's other studies that indicate that it can reduce the size and growth rate of tumors, both in human and animal trials. In fact, it's most dramatic in cases of colorectal cancer. However, I do want to qualify that statement with there are other studies that dispute the use of these mushrooms for treating cancer. So it's kind of up in the air right now, and it requires more research. But some oncologists have concerns that the mushroom's antioxidant properties may actually interfere with chemotherapy drugs.
Huh.
So yes, it may have anti-cancer properties, but it may also interfere with other therapy for cancer.
Interesting.
These mushrooms are like a mini first aid kit. Like, it seems like they're just this great thing that you should take every day, you know?
Yeah.
Although there's...
And it's worth noting, you are not in the pocket of big fungus.
No, big reishi does not support the show. I don't know. I haven't done an ad read yet for this episode. Maybe it's... There was a reishi.com, and I do have to admit that when I was doing research for this, I saw a lot of sites that were like, hey, buy your reishi supplements here, get the teas, get the chocolate bars, whatever. So there's totally a business that thrives around this, but there is some science to it.
Huh.
Well, actually a lot of science to it. So what do you have?
Well, my first one here is not a specific mushroom, though I will mention a couple of different specific ones as we go, but, discussing the topic of bioluminescent mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm sure everyone's quite well acquainted with the mushroom's elevated status in the iconography of stoner blacklight posters.
Oh yeah,
right?
Totally. I'm thinking of like every, you know, I'm a metal fan. Every sleep metal album mm-hmm. poster has like mushrooms at the bottom of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They kind of engage in that kind of yeah. iconography for sure. It's a, yeah. so you'll often see it's either the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland atop a mushroom, or I've seen like bong smoking wizards with mushrooms. I've seen aliens, gray aliens and dashikis with mushrooms, and of course they all glow when you have the black light on
sure,
them. But
yeah.
But there are of course actual mushrooms out there, and actual you know, beyond mushrooms, just fungi that are bioluminescent, and we keep discovering more of them. Now there are rarity within just the overall fungal population, with only about 70 plus species out of again the 100,000 fungi species, 14,000 odd mushroom species. And they emit light 24 hours a day, but you're only going to be able to really observe them at night. Now, some of the more common species here include the jack-o'-lantern mushroom, or Omphalatus, which you'll find in North America, as well as the honey mushroom. And they belong to two separate lineages here. There's another one that made the rounds a few years back called Mycena chlorophus, and that's another glowing mushroom, specifically a mushroom in that case. So 3/4 of the glowing mushrooms belong to the Mycena genus, and a group of mushrooms, and this is a group of mushrooms that decompose organic matter to feed themselves, like a lot of fungi, as we've discussed.
So I know you and I share in common that we're both playing Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Have you gotten to the point yet where you find the glowing mushrooms?
Yeah, they're popping up everywhere.
Yeah, and they're, I mean, I guess like, in the premise of Fallout 4, it's probably because of radiation.
Yeah, just like the glowing feral ghouls.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, you find plenty of glowing fungi without nuclear fallout having to play a role.
Yeah. They even use them in the game, I think, at one point as like, there's like a community that uses them as the lights in their underground community. Like they have the mushrooms mm-hmm. and like lanterns.
Yeah, I think what is it? The Children of the Atom do that.
That's it. Yeah.
And I'm actually running a Dungeons and Dragons campaign right now that takes place in the Underdark. And so there's a lot of bioluminescent mushrooms in that because you gotta, you know, you might have everybody in the party with dark vision, but otherwise you need to have a little light for people to see.
Yeah, some low light for low light vision.
So you say, oh well, there's some luminescent mushroom right here. Now, what kind of glow are we talking about? Generally, it's a yellowish-greenish light with a wavelength of 520 to 530 nanometers. Not all of the parts of the mushrooms necessarily glow. In some species, it's only the cap or the gills. In others, it's the stem. In some species, the mushrooms don't really glow at all, but it's the fine thread-like filaments, the mycelium, from which the mushrooms develop that grows brightly. And specifically, we're talking about a luciferase-mediated reaction here. Now, basically what we're talking about here, these are light-emitting compounds that you'll find in many creatures like fireflies. Of course, they're named, sort of named after Lucifer, which means shining one or light bearer.
It makes sense because most people find them underground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the devil.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is just a common bioluminescent property, and so that's what's at heart here. It's nothing strange and alien and out of keeping with other glowing creatures.
Yeah.
Now, according to San Francisco State University biology professor Dennis Desjardins, luminescent species of fungi come from about 16 different lineages, which suggests that luminescence evolved at a single point and some species later lost the ability to glow. So, in other words, a single early origin of fungal luminescence.
Okay. So why would a mushroom evolve to glow to begin with? Like, what evolutionary advantage is there to that?
Well, that's interesting. There, a number of mysteries still remain.
Okay.
Desjardins believes that some fungi probably glow in order to attract nocturnal animals.
And these animals
then, you know, it's dark, they're glowing, the animals come over to see what the glowing's about, and then they end up helping to disperse the spores.
Yep.
and therefore the species. And this is especially adaptive in closed canopy forest because there's, you're not going to have winds blowing through there, you know, crazy breezes to distribute the spores.
Well, as we've learned here on Stuff to Blow Your Mind, like any good parasite, they have an absolutely bizarre way of reproducing.
Yeah.
That are complicated, mm-hmm. I should say, rather than bizarre. But yeah, that sounds like totally in line with what we know about other parasites.
Yeah. Now, another theory is that in some cases they glow to attract the predators of insects that eat the mushrooms.
Huh.
So it's kind of a defensive mechanism. And then in other cases, we just don't know. Like we're continually finding new bioluminescent mushrooms, and some of them may have a different game in play.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating. Now I'm like really curious if you can really light up a room with bioluminescent mushrooms in a lantern. Probably not. It'd still be pretty gloomy.
Well, it would be like
trying to work in like a goth nightclub, but mm-hmm. probably not an office space.
it would be the same sort of situation as trying to fill a lantern with lightning bugs.
Yeah.
And light your way. Or if you're in the original Riddick movie, like bioluminescent grubs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about the puffball mushroom.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
All right, we're back. Now this one is a fun one because I have a lot of fond memories of this because when I was a when I was a kid, I was in Boy Scouts, and it seemed like we were always having our scout trips out to this area that had a bunch of cows.
Oh, yeah?
So there was something about the puffballs were always growing up around the cows.
Because of the manure?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly know that some mushrooms, including psychedelic mushrooms, depend on cow manure, and that's where you go to find them.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think, I don't know, they were just growing in the same fields with them. And so everyone got a big kick out of stepping on the puff balls and or stepping on the dried cow patties.
Right, because the spores puff out. That's why they're called puff balls. I thought they were called puff balls because they looked like these little puffy clouds.
Uh-huh. Well, that's
when they grow up. They're actually, I would say, of the mushrooms we're talking about today, these are probably the ones that people are most visually familiar with.
Yeah.
They do kind of look like the mushrooms that we, you know, the just generic mushrooms that you buy at the grocery store and add to your salad or whatever, but they're sort of like a bigger mutated version of them. And yeah, like I said, they're called puffballs, not because of how they look, but because the spores puff out of them in a cloud when they're hit, even by falling raindrops. That's nuts to me.
Oh,
so
wow.
Any kind of impact emits these spores. So again, reproduction. They're found worldwide, but when they desiccate, they release their spores when they're agitated. And only one puffball species can produce psychoactive effects. You might be wondering why I'm bringing that up. Well, it's important to a case study that I'm going to bring up in a little bit here. There are a lot of different varieties of puffball mushrooms. They all belong in the Bassidiomycota division, and they all have the following characteristics in common. They do not grow an open cap with the spore-bearing gills, so that's why they have to, you know, emit their spores when they're agitated. Instead, the spores are grown internally, and the mushroom develops an aperture, or it splits open to release the spores outward. Puffballs are a variety of sizes. Some can be as small as a marble, and others can be as big as a basketball. I saw a picture of a guy holding one that was as big as a basketball, and I was kind of shocked by that. But they're white and round. They look a lot like what you think mushrooms look like. Sometimes they're smooth, and other times they have large warts or even like little spikes on their surface, and there's very little stem, so they're pretty close to the ground. The term puffball refers to three genera of fungi, Calvadia, Calbovista, and Lycoperdon. Now, Lycoperdon is the one that I really want to focus on today, but really make sure, so for instance, like if you're out there, like Robert, you just said, you saw them when you were, you know, going to look at cows and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So some people go and forage for puffballs, and they, you know, by all accounts, it's edible. And we did actually an episode here at How Stuff Works about foraging in the woods for various foods. So I'm just going to leave you with this disclaimer, like, you should really make sure you know exactly what kind of mushroom you're picking before you just go out into the woods and grab a mushroom and throw it into a salad or pop it in your mouth.
Yeah, don't go picking odd mushrooms based on anything we've told you here.
Yeah.
If you're going to engage in that, make sure you are following the footsteps of a true expert.
And the reason why, especially with puffballs, is because you can get quite sick, even from just breathing in their spores. So this is the main mushroom that's responsible for something called lycoperdonosis. This is a really rare respiratory illness that's caused by inhaling mushroom spores. And this is the case study that I wanted to mention to you. In 1994, eight teenagers in southeastern Wisconsin had inhaled and chewed the spores of puffball mushrooms at a party. Now, according to the study that I read, there were no other illicit drugs that were found at this party, but it's hard for me to believe that these kids weren't eating these mushrooms because they thought they would have some psychoactive properties. That's why I mentioned earlier, there's only one of these that has any kind of properties like that. Now, three of these people reported nausea within 6 to 13 hours. Within 3 to 7 days, all of the patients had a cough, fever, shortness of breath, muscle pain, and fatigue. Five of them were hospitalized. Two had to be intubated. They had to have a tube put down their throat. Three had to undergo various kinds of lung biopsies to figure out what was going on with them. This revealed that their lungs were inflamed, and they had formed yeast-like structures in between the flesh of their lungs that were like mushroom spores. But there were no fungal cultures found in their lungs. So the spores got in there and either replicated or just were clogging up their lungs or something. It really didn't make them feel well. So I really want to warn you about this. This is a species that seems harmless. We see it all the time. And yet, like, it can make people quite sick. At the other hand, this is very rare. The people were given corticosteroids. They got better. Four of them received antifungal therapy with drugs. All of them recovered between a week and a month. But despite this, there isn't a lot of evidence for what in the literature was referred to as the efficacy of using antifungal agents to treat this disease when you breathe in these spores.
So they don't know if it really works.
No. And in fact, other than this, there's only been three other recorded cases of this. So two of them were in children and one in an adolescent. And remember, these in 1994, these were teenagers. So it seems to be something that affects younger people more. And I just want to point out, too, like, yes, I'm focusing in on the puffball here because it has these rare cases of this disease, right? And they make people quite ill.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the spores of mushrooms may contain mycotoxins, okay? There are several diseases that are associated with inhaling fungal spores, including toxic pneumonitis, hypersensitivity pneumonitis, tremors, chronic fatigue syndrome, kidney failure, and even cancer. So, you know, before you go out into the woods and you just start picking up mushrooms and breathing them in or chopping them up and putting them in a salad, you really want to make sure you know what you're getting. Make sure you've either got an expert with you or, I don't know, you're consulting a book or something like that. But yeah, I mean, just consider fungi have a parasitic lifestyle, like I said. So imagine this, like, you breathe in their spores. Of course, when they get inside your lungs, their cell membranes are going to start absorbing nutrients through your lungs. So
yeah, they've ended up in the wrong place, but that doesn't mean they're not going to attempt to carry out their basic program.
Yeah, absolutely. So puffball, it's a cool, weird kind of, it reminds me of Jigglypuff, the Pokemon. I have to imagine that Pokemon was probably designed after the puffball. but yeah, it's a cute little weird mushroom, but you don't want to necessarily inhale those spores.
Right. Well, if you're wondering, well, what mushrooms can I eat? Well, the one I'm going to talk about, you can definitely eat. It is the edible oyster mushroom, or Pleurotus austriatus. And this, most of us have had this before.
Yeah.
Oyster mushroom, you'll typically find it in various stir fries. It's delicious. But the really cool thing about it, and what I'm going to talk about here, is that this is essentially a carnivorous mushroom.
So before it ends up on your grocery store shelf, it's out there eating things.
Now, I mean, obviously, we eat things that eat other things.
Sure.
Unless you're just eating straight up, you know, plants that are absorbing solar radiation. But the thing here is that you don't necessarily think about what the mushrooms are consuming.
No.
And you don't think, oh, they are essentially catching and consuming live nematodes and or spiders.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's...
So when you eat them, you're getting a little bit of spider.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it kind of comes back around to when you eat your food, how far back are you going to try and trace the heritage of your nutrients? you know, it's going to go to something dead at some point, right? But,
yeah, this isn't like, I'm thinking of the fig wasp, which you and I have both researched before, you know, which ends up in most figs that you eat.
But of course, insects wind up in most foods that you eat. So what can you do?
Yeah.
In this particular case, though, essentially the idea is that the mushrooms will eat these nematodes or these spiders, probably as a way to supplement low levels of nitrogen available in the wood.
Okay.
Because they tend to grow on like the sides of trees and such.
Yeah.
They have that, you know, they look like little oysters, like little overhangs that,
a gnome might
hang under to get away from the rain.
You're hiding from the rain. Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So according to a 2015 study from ARC Imaging Center at Monash University and Birkbeck College, published in PLOS Biology, the shrooms employ special membrane attack complex paraffin-like proteins, or MACPF proteins, to punch holes in the cells of its prey.
Oof.
And what's crazy here is this is the very tactic that human immune cells use against bacterial invaders.
So, like... I'm trying to imagine this. So a spider crawls across this and these cells start poking tiny little holes through it.
Well, the better example is probably with the nematodes.
Okay.
And there's actually a whole classification of nematophagous fungi. And this covers nematode eating fungi in general.
Okay.
They often use, mycelial trap structures or spores to trap the nematodes, or they use special branching structures known as hyphal tips to attack nematode eggs and cysts.
Okay.
They're actively engaging in, I've seen some write-ups even go so far as to say they're hunting and killing nematodes.
Wow.
But they're hunting and killing spiders in some cases as well. And it goes beyond just like mere grotesque curiosity here, because there are potential medical applications here. Learning how to dampen immune response in people with autoimmune disease, stopping listeria escaping our immune cells, and preventing malaria from infecting the liver. Those are just a few possible treasures we can unlock with the fungal key here.
Yeah, it seems like the MACPF that you mentioned earlier, those proteins, the functionality of those could mm-hmm. sort of be reverse engineered for our benefit.
Yeah, that's the hope that that researchers have. But even if we never get there, it is fascinating to think that this mushroom that we love is essentially feeding itself in part on nematodes, which nobody yeah. really wants to think about the role of nematodes in their diets. But of course, there are other animals that eat nematodes as well. So
yeah.
What can you do?
Some people, maybe.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This next mushroom is the one that I have the hardest time looking at pictures of. And
yeah.
So we mentioned earlier, we're going to have pictures of all of these on stufftoblowyourmind.com. You should definitely go look at what this thing looks
this
like.
This one's beautifully bizarre.
Yeah. They're called the bleeding tooth mushroom. And the reason why is because, well, it basically looks like a white mushroom that is bleeding all over the place. Yeah. It has little droplets. Basically, it's a younger specimens of this mushroom. They, quote, bleed a bright red juice. And here's the crazy thing. That juice has anticoagulant properties. Now, the blood itself, it's not actual blood, isn't because the mushroom's damaged. That's just what it really looks like. It's a red sap that emerges from this mushroom because of high root pressure. When they get older, the pressure eases and the fungus turns brown. But they're about 3 to 8 centimeters in diameter. Some are round, but more often than not, they're oval or maybe multi-lobed. They're white or a pale pink. They become deeper pink and then brown as they decay. But yeah, I mean, it basically looks like, it's the stigmata of mushrooms.
Yeah.
Like, it's a mushroom. It's a kind of bizarrely shaped mushroom too. It's a little pinkish, a little whitish, but there's just little dots of what looks like blood coming out of this thing. Sometimes so much so that it drips down the side of these mushrooms. They're just utterly creepy looking.
Yeah, the thing they really remind me of, if we have any Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans out there, there was a film, a 1965 film titled Attack of the Eye Creatures. It had two V's in the title.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's wonderfully bad film, and it involves a number of these shambling eye creatures, and they look like bleeding tooth mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're real weird. They were first described by an American mycologist in 1912, his name was Howard James Banker, and they are found in North America, Europe, Iran, and Korea. In Britain, it's mainly known as a woodland mushroom, so they mostly grow near coniferous trees.
Mm-hmm.
They're not poisonous, despite how bizarre they look.
Yeah, it looks like the last mushroom you would,
why would you put
intentionally
it in your mouth?
Eat. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So one of the nicknames that it has, especially in Britain, is strawberries and cream.
Oh, and well, okay.
That's the last thing that I would call it. It doesn't at all look appetizing. There's another nickname for it is devil's tooth. But yeah, they're not poisonous, but they are pretty bitter. They have an accumulation of an element called cesium-137 in them, which doesn't make them very pleasant to eat. Their formal name is Hydenellum, again, here we are with the Latin. Let me see if I can get this. Hydenellum pecki, I believe is what it is. But so yeah, they go by a number of names. That's the formal name, devil's tooth, strawberries and cream, or bleeding tooth. Now here's the thing. Remember I said it had anticoagulant properties in it? So this blood, this fake blood, it actually has something in it called atromentin, which is an effective anticoagulation that's similar to heparin. It is antibacterial against Streptococcus pneumoniae. This is the main bacteria that causes pneumonia in people.
Okay.
And you can even use this stuff to stimulate smooth muscles. I don't know what that means, but it was in the literature. And it causes apoptosis in certain leukemia cells, which we've talked about apoptosis before when we've mentioned MDMA on the show before. So MDMA also has apoptosis properties, but this is specific to leukemia. It might be a way to treat it. All these properties were discovered in 1965 by a team of researchers published in the Journal of Pharmaceutical Science. So we've known for a while now that it has these anticoagulant properties to it. The other thing that it made me think of was when we've talked about bats before on the show and how their saliva has anticoagulant properties in it.
I know. I love how that 65 article that you reference here, it includes mention of Hydenellum diabolus.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that, I'm wondering, is that another species of it that is diabolic in nature? Or
yeah,
maybe that was an earlier term for it?
Or maybe that was what its name was earlier. So from what I remember loosely from the notes was that Hydenellum pecki was named as such because there was a guy, a well-known mycologist with the last name Peck.
Ah.
And this, it was like sort of like an honor to him by naming it after him. But I wonder if maybe Diabolus was what its name was first, or maybe there's different, difference between the devil's tooth and the bleeding tooth. Like they're the same, species, but different genera. I'm not 100% sure about that. That is a good point that it has a different name in there, but I believe they all have that same anticoagulant kind of seeping blood property to them. So. Yeah, if you see one of these, I mean, you could pop it in your mouth. It's going to taste pretty gross, but it's not going to kill you.
But absolutely do not pop that in your mouth.
Yeah.
Do not pop any mushrooms in your mouth because you heard us talking about them.
Yeah, that too.
So speaking of the devil, we're going to get to our last selection here. And again, with me, this is not a specific mushroom, but a type of behavior, if you will, manifestation that you see with mushrooms and fungi, and that is the fairy ring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's lots of folklore that pops up out of the fairy rings.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows up, it's in Shakespeare, right?
Yeah.
And it's in Dungeons and Dragons.
It's basically cultures around the world.
Most important literary achievements of humankind.
Yeah.
Shakespeare and Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, you've encountered it in cultures around the world because essentially what we're talking about, fairy rings essentially just means strange circles on the ground or in the ground that you find in nature. And, the causes we attribute, fairies dancing around and around on the spot, or perhaps it's witches or devils. Hey, maybe it's a UFO if you're using a modern interpretation of it. It's whatever the attributed supernatural cause. However, the basic idea is that some unseen force is causing the circle to manifest.
I want to say, have you ever seen, is it pronounced Haxan? I always get the pronunciation wrong.
This is the old devil worshipping film.
Yeah, it has an umlaut over the A. Is it Hawkson? I'm not sure what the proper pronunciation is of it, but yeah, it's this old documentary about sort of the folklore around witches.
I've never watched it in full, but it has some wonderful images in it.
Yeah. I want to say that fairy rings show up in that, but I might be wrong.
Okay.
But because of the reasons you just mentioned, because of the idea that witches did like rituals that they danced around the fairy ring.
Right. Now, absolutely no fairy rings are caused by fairies or aliens.
Or the devil.
Sorry, but that's the truth. But there are accounts of fairy rings that are not shroom related, not directly fungal related.
Okay.
So I ran across one, for instance, from Nambia, and there are apparently fairy rings here that are caused by termite constructed water traps. But other instances of fairy rings are definitely tied to fungal activity.
Okay.
And not the dancing myconids that you encounter in Disney's Fantasia.
Right. Yeah.
So there are essentially two varieties of fungal fairy rings then. The first is more mysterious. And I don't think I've ever seen one of these in person, but this is just a circle of dark green grass in a lawn or meadow.
Okay.
And with surrounding grass, it's somewhat lighter.
Mm-hmm.
The culprit here is subsurface fungal mycelia that cause the darker color due to increased nitrogen produced by the fungus.
Interesting.
And you'll also find other fungi that cause a necrotic ring of dead vegetation due to nitrogen depletion.
Right. Which, again, back to the parasitic aspect of fungi. Okay.
Right. And the mycelia is just kind of threading through underneath the grass. So you can imagine where you look at this and you're like, why is this grass greener? Why is this grass deader?
Yeah.
It must be some sort of supernatural force. And then, of course, there's the more overt form, and that's where you have actual surface mushrooms, identifiable mushrooms that are lined up more or less in a rough circle.
Yeah. You know what I just realized is, in my head, fairy rings combine two of the mushrooms you've mentioned today. The fairy rings and then the phosphorescent mushrooms. But yeah. I guess they don't necessarily, right? They don't glow.
I did not, in my research, I did not run across a species of mushroom that was both, but I'm not sure. It's possible, as you'll see when I describe, what exactly is going on here.
Okay.
So in either case, whether we're talking about subsurface mushrooms, surface mushrooms, the cause of the circle has nothing to do with fairy kingdom and everything to do with spore dispersal. So this is a fabulous model here. So you can start with a single spore. All right. It lands in a field and then it grows. Okay. It eventually produces a mushroom, or at least it reaches its adult form and then it spreads out more spores. And then this causes the growing colony to spread only outward since the inner circle, is the territory that it's ravaged. Okay. There are no more nutrients there. So it can only spread out. So it's kind of like
theoretically the circle is going to get larger. Over
yes.
Time.
The circle gets larger and larger and the inside of the circle is depleted of the nutrients that it doesn't mean that the grass is all dead.
It just
means that
just
there's nothing
nitrogen.
Else. Yeah. Nothing else that these, this particular fungi can feed off of. So the circle continues to grow and grow. And sometimes there are additional circles. So you'll actually get, like figure eights and whatnot.
Yeah. I was thinking I wonder if there's like a Venn diagram one out there somewhere.
Maybe.
Yeesh.
But I love this because
the wonders of nature.
But I love this one because it makes me think of, say, what if you had a sci-fi or fantasy scenario with, say zombies or vampires, you know, whatever your breed of destructive monster that reproduces rapidly might be,
yeah.
You could have a similar scenario where it starts at one point and then it begins to spread outward, but it's spreading as a ring because it has to feed and it cannot continue to survive in the area that it has ravished.
That would, all right, producers of the new movie Rings that's coming out, I think, pretty soon, right? They didn't pay us to say this, but that would be a good spin on that mythos.
Yeah.
The idea of the girl who crawls out of the television and kills people.
Yeah.
Her ring forms in like an actual geographic area as she kills everybody around. only people in that ring-like area can watch the video and it grows further and further. Or you know what show it would work really well on?
What's that?
The Strain.
Yeah, yeah, it would. Yeah,
that's a good theory.
It reminds me a lot too of the creatures known as the Shrunk. In R. Scott Baker's books.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah.
these are kind of the orcs of his world, except they seem to be just they're particularly bred, particularly created to just ravage the land.
Yeah,
and so I can imagine, and they breed rapidly, so they would be a good model for this. Like they're in one area and then they spread outward in this ring of desolation.
You know, I like to think that there's still obviously a lot for me to read, but I like to think that I've read a lot of horror, and I think you have too. And I can't really think of a ton of mushroom-based horror, and yet it seems to me that there's something fundamentally creepy about mushrooms and just their formations or just their life process in general.
Off the top of my head, I cannot think of a good one. Maybe I'll think of one after we go offline here.
Maybe you out there have one. You're screaming at your podcast right now and saying, Robert, Christian, what? You forgot about whatever.
I mean, well, the most obvious one is that it's the fungi from Yugoth. I believe that the Migo in Lovecraft stories are technically funguses.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
But that's the only example that's instantly coming to mind. So there may be some other great ones out there.
Yeah, maybe there are.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and close it out here. Again, we could only discuss a few different mushrooms, a few different types of mushroom behavior, if you will. So if you have some other amazing mycological specimens that you would like us to discuss, let us know.
Especially if you're a mycologist, we'd love to hear from you. I'd be really curious.
Yeah.
What
your favorites are.
That and like what's the daily life of a mycologist like? It sounds charming to just kind of go around and identify mushrooms and examine them and write about them.
Indeed.
With lots of life.
And occasionally you get to, name them.
Yeah.
So hey, check out stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find all the podcasts, you'll find blog posts, you'll find videos, you'll find all sorts of content, including links out to our various social media accounts.
Yeah, we are on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. We post lots of things to those channels, not just the podcasts that you're listening to, but also articles that we write, videos that we write or star in, and lots of other stuff that we find in our travels across the internet when we find bizarre science oddities and we want you to know about them. As I mentioned earlier, I take pictures of weird mushrooms in the dog park sometimes and post them to our Facebook page.
Yeah. And hey, you can too. That's a great place to share them. And you can also send your weird mushroom photos, your mushroom horror suggestions, what have you, to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.